know we're going to talk a lot about what you've done, but I'm kind of curious what the single most important thing you want to accomplish this year as you look forward is.
Well, I think as we look forward to 2018, we have a continuation of the regulatory certainty that we're trying to achieve in the marketplace. And I think oftentimes we don't remember, as you know, here in Washington, D.C., that it's very important to provide clarity, certainty, confidence to those across the country that we're regulating, because they're making investments toward achieving, in our case, environmental objectives. But they want to build a plan. And I think when you have rules that are untethered to statutes, and you see this competition and court actions and uncertainty, it just doesn't, I think, breed good outcomes either for the environment or for, you know, the industry that we're regulating. So providing certainty there is very, very important. As you know, we've got a continuation of efforts there. The Waters of the United States rule will finish this year. The Clean Power Plan rescission will finish this year. The process of analyzing whether there's authority under Section 111 as a replacement to the Clean Power Plan will finish this year. But we've got a host of others. You know, the new source review is something that we're announcing soon. In fact, one of the things we've tried to do is provide clarity in that regard. And I don't think people really realize what that is. Here are companies across the country that are wanting to spend, in many instances, hundreds of millions of dollars on improving outcomes at their facilities with respect to emission controls, and they feel like if they spend too much, it triggers new permitting responsibilities. So they need clarity so that their permits are not impacted, but they can also invest and achieve good outcomes. So new source review is something we're working on very, very diligently. So there's lots of things going on with respect to regulatory certainty.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you came in, I talked to a lot of free market conservatives who were so excited about you coming to the EPA, thinking you were going to end regulatory overreach, get rid of the Clean Power Plan, get rid of the endangerment finding. So a year later, obviously, the Clean Power Plan repeal is in process. But, you know, the blue team, red team exercise is reportedly not going to happen. And, of course, the endangerment finding is
still
in the
books. Well, don't believe everything you read.
But what can you tell me about that?
I mean, I think what's important about that whole exercise, mm-hmm. Not necessarily red team, blue team, but there was a process foul at the very beginning in this journey we've been on since 2009. And the process foul is that the agency did something that it had never done prior to that time, nor has it done since. Where it went out literally and took the work product of the UN International Panel on Climate Change and just simply transferred it to the EPA and used that as the basis of their finding. So it's very important that I think the American people have a transparent, objective discussion about this issue. And so that's what we've been advancing. The form it takes, the vehicle by which we achieve that, is something yet to be determined. But the discussion is important because it does impact everything that we do. And one of the things you and I have talked about, Jen, quite a bit, is it's not just, you know, that decision that was made in 2009 and how we evaluate it going forward. It's also what authority do we possess? What statutory authority do we possess? You know, we reside in the executive branch, and we only have the authority that Congress gives us. And so when Congress doesn't give specific authority in the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, CERCLA, TSCA, whatever the act might be, we can't pinch hit for Congress. Speaking baseball terms, since we're approaching opening day. And I think what's happened in the last several years is that pinch hitting, and that creates the uncertainty. So we're going to get those things right going forward. We're doing our job at this point, soliciting comment on what folks across the country think Section 111 provides as far as authority and the regulation in this space. But rescission of CPP, the so-called Clean Power Plan, is something that's going away, and then we'll evaluate what the next steps are. But one thing I didn't mention earlier about 2018, and I'm very, very excited about, is the war on lead, mm-hmm. Lead in our drinking water, and the continuation of Superfund cleanup across the country.
Right.
We need to achieve good outcomes in both.
Absolutely. Do you, on endangerment, I just want to go back to that, do you favor repealing it?
I think that's something that's not the decision right now.
Gotcha.
I mean, the decision right now is we know that there was a process foul. It would be unwise to prejudge any kind of process we put in place to respond to that. The question is, and I think the focus should be, what do we do to provide an objective, transparent discussion in behalf of the American people with respect to this very important issue? And I think what folks miss in this regard, it's not whether the climate is changing. It's not whether there's warming trends. It's not whether we contribute to it. All those things are the case. What the issue is, how do we know in 2018 what the ideal global average surface temperatures be in 2100? I mean, that's these models that are developed at this point look forward 80 plus years, and to make policy decisions in 2018 and not have, I think, a transparent discussion about that for the American people is just simply not wise to do. So that's what we're trying to address.
I can appreciate the question about, you know, looking ahead, but in terms of looking back on climate change, you know, you do have the Global Change Research Program, which includes EPA staff, came out with that report last year saying that, you know, we've seen 1.8 degrees of warming since 1900, and it's extremely likely that human activity is the cause. Is that something you agree with? Are they wrong?
Well, look, that was a contribution. There were several agencies across the federal government that contributed to that report. And I think it's not a matter of right or wrong. It's a matter of making sure that all voices are heard in the process, because there are people that disagree with that. And I think that, you know, when we do science at the agency, from my perspective, Jen, it needs to be very, very objective, very transparent, very open. And that's not happened for a number of years. And to give you a couple of examples. Most people think that we do most of our science in-house at the EPA. We contract out a lot of our science. In fact, as we contract science out, when those studies produce findings, we then publish it as part of a rule, but we don't publish sometimes the data and the methodology that leads to those outcomes. That's not right. I mean, if we were doing our own science with respect to rulemaking, you and everyone in the country would see the data and the methodology and how we form those conclusions. And so we need to get back in the business of the agency, leaning into being very robust in our scientific review, getting the best scientists in the country to work with us and for us in air and water and the rest, and making sure we do work internal to the agency ourselves. And when we go outside of the agency and contract out through grants, those science evaluations, the methodology and data need to be a part of the official record, the rulemaking, so that you and others can look at it and say, was it wisely done? That's where the rub is in some of these issues. Making sure that there's robust analysis in these conclusions that are being drawn by multiple folks across the country. Mm-hmm. Not only in that space, but across all the rulemaking that we do.
Speaking of rulemaking, you have said that California shouldn't dictate air emission standards for the rest of the country. Should the waivers allowing California to set its own rules and clean air standards?
Well, I think federalism is not one state dictating to the rest of the country what should occur in the area of CAFE. And you're speaking of CAFE standards. And we're in the process right now of finalizing our determination as of April 1st. As you know, the president, joined the president last March when we went to Detroit, announced to the auto sector that the accelerated review that the previous administration engaged in January of 17, that wasn't supposed to happen until April of 18, that we were going to correct that foul and make sure that that we did it in due course, which was the April 1st determination that we're going to issue soon. But there's work to be done in that area. We seek partnership and collaboration, not only with California, but all states across the country. We want to make sure that we're making informed decisions on what those standards should be, those CAFE standards, fuel efficiency standards for cars. What we don't want, Jen, is to come in and try to artificially set those standards so high as you know, so to create this percentage of cars in electric vehicles that people aren't buying. And the whole purpose of CAFE standards is to make cars more efficient that people are actually buying. And if you just come in and try to drive this to a point where the auto sector in Detroit just makes cars that people don't want to purchase, then people are staying in older cars and the emission levels are worse, which defeats the overall purpose of what we're trying to achieve. So there is a wise way to approach this. We're going to make informed decisions on it. California, we're talking with them. They're talking with us. And we'll see where it leads. But I can say unequivocally, the waiver, you know, I understand that California's role in this process, but California is not, you know, the arbiter of these issues. The EPA, the DOT, and others make those decisions. California contributes as well. They regulate GHG, these at the state level. But that shouldn't and can't dictate to the rest of the country what these levels are going to be.
You've got the midterm. You noted the evaluation deadline is coming up. Will we see just the evaluation then? Or are we going to see a proposal of the change?
I don't know yet. I mean, that's actually, I was in some briefing yesterday, mm-hmm. that we were trying to make some decisions on that, and we'll be announcing that soon.
Okay. And Transportation Department, it doesn't seem like they're going to have an NPRM out around
that. Elaine's doing a great job over there. We talked about this last week. There's a lot of work being done, so we'll just have to see what comes out.
Stepping back, I did want to ask you, you've done a lot of looking back over the last year. What everyone knows things they've done wrong or wish they did better. What's been your biggest mistake in the last year?
Well, I think that when you think of the rulemaking, some of the areas where we tried to get out and provide clarity soon, we perhaps were a little bit too quick in a couple of areas. But I will tell you that I think overall our regulatory approach has been very, very solid. It's been strategic. It's been focused upon doing our job consistent with rule of law and process. I mean, and I think we're starting to see the fruition of some of that internally at the agency. The other thing I would say to you that I've been very, very encouraged by is as we began this journey, the Superfund task force that we put together that had 42 recommendations, taking comment from regions and career staff at headquarters, those 42 are being implemented now. I'd like to see that kind of take full shape and we get that in place sooner rather than later, but I think we're making great progress there. As evidenced by what? The decisions we're seeing and the movement we're seeing in some of these Superfund sites from Westlake to San Jacinto to Portland to BF Goodrich in Kentucky, all these various Superfund sites that have waited for years for decisions, we're starting to see, again, the fruition of some of the work that was done earlier in the year. Mm-hmm.
You're in the mix on RFS as well, and I know it's important for you, as you noted, to stay within the constructs of law and what Congress dictates, but I'm wondering, you know, how can EPA really have the authority, as it's been explored, to extend an RVP waiver to E15, given that the statute expressly says 10%?
I think the statute is very, let me say this, mm-hmm. I think it's ambiguous at worst, and there's been a lot of legal analysis around that section. I've been personally reviewing some of those with various folks internal to the agency. We've not finalized that process, but I believe there's a very persuasive argument that legally that this is permissible for us to grant 12 months a year. But that's something that we haven't finalized, and it's very important. But equally important in this process is that inflationary, you know, on the RIN market that we see impacting refiners. Refiners are the obligated party to pay those RINs, but they don't blend, as you know. So they can't push this out into the marketplace, but yet they are the ones that have to ensure that the ethanol is being blended in the fuel stock. And that's creating some tremendous pressure on refineries across the country. And we need to make sure that we understand that we should provide clarity on the RVP waiver, and we endeavor to do that soon. And if the law allows me to do that, I'll proceed that direction. But we also need RIN reform for those refineries across the country. The president is committed to RFS, committed to farmers and ranchers. I am as well, the letter and the spirit of the law in that regard. But we also want to see refineries stay in business because we haven't built many refineries in this country in the last 30 or so years.
You know, in the time you've led EPA, environmental activists obviously have taken apart your record, and they don't talk about Superfund. They're talking a lot about you favoring industry interests over public health and ripping away critical air and water protections. How do you respond to this criticism?
Well, it's a little bit confusing to me because when you look at what we're doing at the agency to address the various areas we regulate, we're very aggressively pursuing airtainment under the Air Quality Standards Program. When President Obama left office, 40% of this country lived in non-attainment areas, areas that didn't meet air quality standards, 120 million people. We have more sites on the Superfund list than when he left office than when he came in. With water, we had Gold King in Flint, Michigan, that the agency contributed to both of those. Now we have a president who's committed to an infrastructure package that is about investing in water infrastructure to ensure that we don't see those kinds of things happen in the future. We have an agency under our leadership that's focusing on where do we want to be in 5 years with respect to air attainment? How are we going to improve sites with respect to Superfund? I mean, we took 7 sites off the national priority list last year. That hasn't been done for a number of years. This year, we're anticipating 25 to 30 in addition to those 7. And as far as I know, that's never been done. And this isn't a matter, I mean, Westlake is an example, has waited 28 years for a decision. We made a decision on that site, and the uranium that's posing risk to health there is going to be removed within 4.5 years. So you go from a situation that didn't have an answer for 28 years on how to clean it up to a decision and actual cleanup in less than 5 years. So that's the reason it's confusing to me, because when you look at the record of the past administration and you look at what we're focused upon is getting back to the basics, focusing on fundamentals, showing leadership in each of these key areas from air, water, land. I think we're very focused at achieving good outcomes and at the same time providing regulatory certainty to those that we regulate. Because here's why that's important. I believe that most businesses, most states, most individuals want to do the right thing. They care about the air they breathe, the water they drink, and that we need to see them as partners working together to ensure good outcomes in each of these respective from air, land, and water. And in the past several years, that's not been the case. They've been treated as adversaries. And I will tell you, I'm optimistic based upon what I hear from folks across the country, they have confidence, they're deploying capital. In this false narrative that we can't be about jobs and also being good stewards of our environment, I think is something that we're rejecting as well and seeing great progress there.
You know, there are some, I mentioned those free market conservatives who had such hopes for you. They talk a lot about cutting the staff of EPA, think you can actually do as much as you're doing now with a third less staff. Do you agree?
Well, we're at Reagan era levels right now. And I think what is important as we look at how we deliver services is to evaluate how we're doing. You know, how are we doing so far? And when you have 10 regions across the country and you see the great inconsistency on permitting, compliance, assistance, those kinds of issues, we've got to get more uniformity, more, I think, verticality, if you will, to get accountability in each of these respective areas. On answers on Superfund, that's the reason we took the Superfund decisions over $50 million back to my desk, because what you saw in the 10 regions is a tremendous amount of disparity on how Superfund sites were being treated, and we wanted more, again, accountability in those sites. So we've got permitting. Before we came in this position, before I arrived, we asked the question last year, how long does it take to get through permitting? We didn't even know. They had data, mounds of data, but they couldn't tell how long it took to get through the permitting process. We did the analysis. It takes a long time. I know that's going to surprise you, but it takes a long time. So we're in the process now reforming all that internal to the agency, and by the end of 2018, every decision we make on a permit will be done within 6 months. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be granted. That just means it's going to be up or down. To those that are seeking a permit, they're going to know, are you going to deploy capital, pursue the project or not, you know, based upon our analysis, and not have to wait literally years and years and years with a great deal of uncertainty.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about what's next for you. If a Senate seat from Oklahoma or the Attorney General job opened up, would you take them or pursue them?
Well, I love what I'm doing presently, and I think it's one of the most consequential items on the agenda as far as the domestic agenda. The president has made a point of saying jobs matter. The EPA has been an agency that has been somewhat, in my view, used by the previous administrations as a penalty to certain sectors of our economy. So what we're doing matters a lot. What the next steps are, I mean, that's not something I've never really lived that way. I didn't know we were talking about baseball as I came in here. We owned a AAA baseball team. If you'd asked me 20 years ago, were you ever going to own a AAA baseball team? I wouldn't have known. Didn't know I was going to serve as Attorney General. If you'd asked me 2 years ago if I'd be in this position talking to you about these issues, I wouldn't have guessed that. So I think you take the opportunities they come, serve, you know, obviously with fidelity now and do the work before you, and hopefully, you know, you make informed decisions going forward.
If President Trump asked you to do a job, you wouldn't say no.
Well, President Trump, look, I love serving him because two things that I think are so important. One, he's got tremendous courage. He's taking on issues, frankly, that previous administrations wouldn't take on. And then two, he's about results and getting accountability and action. I mean, when you look at the people that I serve with in the cabinet, when you look at his leadership as president, the whole State of the Union was really a message about what? Here's what I promised you. Here's what we did in 17. Here are the results. And here's what we're going to do in 2018. And here's what we are going to achieve as far as results. So that kind of leadership, accountability, action, taking action, getting results, is something that you don't normally see in political leaders. And that's the reason I think he's getting so much done and very exciting to serve him in that regard.
I did want to swing back on cars because, you know, the way you were talking, it almost seemed like, I mean, you're concerned that California has been in the driver's seat. How do you bear it?
Well, I'd say a little bit different than that in the sense that there's been, I think since we started this discussion last March, April, you know, the very day we were in Detroit, the very day I was in Detroit with the president, the governor of California sent me a letter either that day or shortly thereafter, not terribly responsive to that which we announced in Detroit. So what I have endeavored to do over the last year is extend a hand, recognize that we want to hear from those folks in California and hear from the political leadership and try to make informed decisions, but also say at the same time, we have a job to do, we're going to do our job, and if there are steps being taken to impede that, we'll have to address that.
California regulators are on record saying that kind of the price for admission of talks at these lower level is you know, higher targets in 2030. Is that a price you're willing to pay?
Well, some people have thrown out these ideas that we would extend, you know, beyond, that we'd extend beyond the you know, 2025 timeframe. That's something we're not looking at presently. We want to get clarity. I mean, as you know, this whole midterm evaluation is ultra statute. It's extra statute. It's not in the statute. It was created back in 2011 timeframe that we would take a look in 2018 to determine whether the levels set then were good going forward another 7 or 8 years. I'm a little bit, being predictive about what's going to be taking place in 2030 is really hard. And I think it creates problems when you do that too aggressively. So that's not something that we're terribly focused on right now.
When you came in, you said you'd listen to the career staff. You'd listen a lot. I'm wondering what you've learned from talking to them.
It's been really, really encouraging to me as we have gone back in some of these areas like lead in our drinking water. Before I arrived, the lead and copper rules, you know, from 1990, mm-hmm. the agency had spent already a decade when I arrived on updating that rule and had not updated it. You know, when I talk to folks in the Superfund portfolio, you know, they're vitalized. These folks in the water, they're vitalized. You know, it's good to have some AAs in place now, those deputies that actually lead those program offices, because I think they're building, you know, toward each of these objectives we have and getting really good input and participation. So again, I'm encouraged where we are internally. I'm really encouraged by what I'm hearing from those career staff that feel like certain areas have been dormant. And now they're vitalized in ways that they haven't been before, and we're actually seeing results. They're getting jazzed about results. This administrator's list that I have on Superfund, it's really exciting to me to go in these meetings, Jen, and have some of these career staff say, yep, this one's coming off. We're going to be able to get this done. And they're thinking of new ways at this point to achieve outcomes because of the renewed focus. So it's encouraging.
Have they changed your views about the agency? Or climate change?
I think that my views about the agency were misstated and misunderstood from the very beginning. I was never about, and I said it repeatedly, perhaps people didn't hear as much, but it was never about shutting down the agency or those. It was about what? Making sure that we stayed within our moorings, that we did our job, that we respected federalism and cooperative federalism with the states, that we worked together, that we can achieve growth and environmental stewardship at the same time. And that rule of law matters. I mean, those are not radical concepts at all. Those are concepts that, frankly, all executive branch agencies ought to be living within, and it had not happened for a number of years. So what I think is happening is renewed focus toward those things, and I think better outcomes will occur.